Hello and welcome to the March podcast of the Aldi magazine with me, Harry Mount, editor of the Aldi, and I'm delighted to have the tremendously distinguished actress Amanda Barry, who has just received the Aldi of the Year award for her contribution to the Carry On films. Amanda, what a delight to have you here.
Oh.
And you began in Carry On Cabbie, is that right? That was your first?
That's my first, yeah. My first Carry On.
And
yes.
How did you first get involved in that?
Well, the people who did the Carry On films, they were making all sorts of other films at the same time, the same group of people. So I think it just sort of emerged out of that setup of Betty Box and Gerald Thomas and all those people. And the Carry Ons just sort of, it was the same, basically the same cast.
Yeah.
So they just, you know, for each film there was a different cast, but it came from the same pool of people. And that's how they started, really.
And what was your role in Carry On Cabbie?
I've forgotten her name. Daphne or something of that sort. She was rather sort of trying to sort of pull her clients to get into the car.
Right.
Something subtle of that sort. Something very Carry On, really.
And it was, you obviously were a huge hit because you were asked to star in the fantastic, the wonderful Carry On Cleo, I think the following year, because they made the films very quickly.
Yes, they did.
Yeah.
I was, and I was horrified, to be honest, because I could not in any way see me in any shape or form playing Cleopatra.
Really? Because you've got a beautiful nose she's got?
No.
Thanks so much.
Oh, not the nose. No, I've seen the nose on coins. We don't have the same nose.
I think she'd have had to
have a nose job. Thank you. Thanks. Wouldn't she? A Cleopatra would have had to have a nose job. But she was intellectually very superior, wasn't she?
As you are, yeah. Yeah.
Because at that time, well, I think it still applies, really, the thought of playing anything, even in a film, you were meant to be sort of very well endowed for a start,
yeah,
in certain places,
yeah,
usually blonde,
yeah,
and very daffy. Well, I could do the daffy bit, but I went, they can't have me as Cleopatra. So anyway, I got over that because I thought, well, it'll be a joke one. But I did have a lot of trouble when I was in, because when they took me to my first fittings, they took me to Mr. Schneider, who explained to me how I would be dressed, and he did explain there were going to be this costume with these little straps across the breast, and the breast was going to be exposed. And I said, Mr. Schneider, I don't think I've got enough to put in the little thing. No, don't worry, I'll show you, there'd be a cross thing because the nipple would be covered on the thing and the little breast would be sticking out. And I was going, Mr. Schneider, I honestly don't think... I only weighed about 6 stone 2 at the time. And I went, Mr. Schneider! And I just ripped off my clothes and he went, oh my God! And ran to the phone. So I didn't start off with massive confidence. If you know what I mean, I went... And I thought every day I went home I was going on stage at night, but I used to go home and think,
thank you,
they will sack me tomorrow because I am so ugly.
Oh, did you really think that? Because you're extremely beautiful now, but you're very, very beautiful in 1964.
Right. I used to go home and go, oh my God, what have they got me doing this for? I did, honestly. Mind you, I look now and I think, what the poof was that about, dear? Yes.
You think you fundamentally lacked in confidence?
Oh, yeah. Yes, absolutely. Always, yes. It's not one of my... Yes, but you have to remember what they say, beware the confidence of the amateur. So it's not always good to be confident.
Right. Well, you try harder, you work harder.
Yes.
Because it must have been very hard work filming, because they're done very, very quickly, those Carry On films, is that right?
In fact, having been in Coronation Street for all those years, it is very similar to the way they do a soap opera. Very similar.
Producing X amount of minutes per day.
I think it was 7 minutes a day for the Carry Ons. And it was so like Coronation Street. Whoever was in the scene walked together. They knew their lines. If you hadn't known your lines, so you couldn't have done it. There was no great discussion of motivation. You just stood there. You did the lines. And I don't remember, in my little period there, anybody giving any direction.
Where were
you? Because the people that they employed, there was a different little group of actors in those days that would exist now if you went into a different field, but it was all review people. And review people were very used to going, here's a sketch, you're 92, here's a sketch, you're a 10-year-old, here's a sketch. And you just did
it. That's it, no more direction.
In review, you went, it was what you could do. And the people, all the people in the carry-ons were established people in their own rights. And even I, who was just beginning, I was playing the lead in the West End. In fact, my agent got mixed up and I started opening night in She Loves Me and also Carry On Cleo on the same day. Not good.
And you did both, did you?
I did. Not good. Not good. Ripping my wig off and my eye makeup off and trying to, in a broken down car run by two gay friends of mine who ran me backwards and forwards. No cars, no transport in those days.
And the payment not great. They're famously quite cheapskates, weren't they, Peter Rogers and Gerald Thomas?
But they paid what other people paid. Nobody paid. Nobody sort of got money. You just got the next week's rent, really. You went, oh, good, I've got next week's and the week after. You didn't. I mean, I don't remember anybody then, particularly of my age group, having a car or a flat. You didn't expect to.
Even when you were starring in a very successful film?
No. Because you knew that we'd carry on. It was over in about 3-4 weeks. That was it. No, you'd be back saying, what's happening next week? Oh, am I eating? Yes. What? You know, no, it was. I don't think people thought of it as much then as becoming famous, as just keeping going.
Right. And true the stories that Peter Rogers or Gerald Thomas could lock the canteen except for during the lunch hour so people didn't linger, things like that?
Oh, I think that's all true. I didn't really experience it that much. But yes, I'm sure it was very. I think my biggest complaint about them, if any, because we all owe them, really, is that they didn't look after their older people when they got really seriously ill. And as they kind of conned everybody into doing all those other compilations of shows, but they couldn't have given us a contract for them in those days because TV didn't exist.
Right.
So we couldn't have had a contract saying, oh, yes, and if they invent television and everybody will be watching it, something we'll just in case that happens, we're right. You wouldn't have done it. But when it did happen, and when they didn't just show the film, which they should have been paid for, but they didn't, they did all these compilations which were really completely outside that.
Right.
And at least, I mean, I'm lucky because I've always staggered along and worked somewhere. But there were people who were really ill that really needed
it. Sort of Charles Hawtrey.
Charles Hawtrey, Terry Thomas, Joni Sims. There were so many people that they owed such a lot to. And of course, Sid, in a way, should not have been running around on a stage earning his tax money because of his heart condition.
Right, right.
Because I used to put all Sid's bets on. You know, Barbara went to bed with him. I put his bets on.
Ah, funny.
Look at it that way.
Who had the better time, do you think?
I did. So I was constantly on the phone to some bookie hidden somewhere, putting his bets on. But he wasn't even allowed to back horses or eat eggs. His heart was so bad.
Really?
And what was he doing? He was off doing on stage. No.
And what was he like, Sir James, as a person?
Oh, loved him.
Very charming, funny.
Funny. We did have a little agreement together that if ever of us, because we were both gigglers, got to that state that one would respect the other had gone. I mean, we didn't do a lot of this because it was too, like, you don't in Coronation Street either, but it does happen. And Sid one day was doing a scene, and he was supposed to say, you get back now in a week. You've got to get Caesar back in your. He kept saying Caesar instead of Shakespeare. The line was, you've got to get Shakespeare back in your apartment. Well, he didn't. He kept saying Caesar. And then they went to the next scene. He did it again in the next scene. In fact, in the end, he got these blood-red eyes pouring with tears. And we were sent home at 4 o'clock.
Really?
For misbehaviour, yeah. So that's my memory of him. I just loved him. I just thought he was.
And even if, unlike Barbara Woods, you didn't go to bed with him, highly attractive, but you could see that on screen.
Well, because to be honest, any man who's got that sort of sense of humour and is constantly in a good mood, actually, I never saw him other than that. The most fun to work with.
Quite like his on-screen persona.
You couldn't tell the difference.
Really?
No, you couldn't tell the difference at all. No.
The laugh was the same?
Oh, yes, exactly the same. That was just Sid. But the art of being able to be just yourself.
Right.
Professionally, right. Is an art.
Well, because they're actually all incredibly well acted, the carry-ons, and I can't think of a dull performance.
No.
And as you say, they weren't particularly directed. That's just choosing, casting extremely good actors.
And they were all leading actors. I mean, if you went through what everybody there had done, I mean, it would have been the equivalent of getting the cast of Ab Fab in, probably. Right. You know, that's why if you'd ever went to another level, I think you could only ever do them again if you went into, you know, Becker of Dibley or Ab Fab or one of those things.
Right.
And said, right, now those people, I mean, look at June, who we've just lost.
Oh, yes, June, great woman.
June came up the same way, via review, thing, and could do just anything.
Right.
I think gave you that, yeah.
No, incredibly professional. And what about the great Kenneth Williams, hard to get along with? Or?
Well, actually, at the time, I was terrified of him. I thought, you always think people don't like you, don't you? You go through life going, I don't think they like me. But I just, with Kenneth, I just thought, to work with, absolutely fine. But I never made any contact with him. I think he kind of thought, well, I think it's all right. But not until I did years later a quiz on television called the Clever Stupid Quiz or something. And I think they were rather, I can't remember who the people were now, but it was sort of, I think it was a bit of royalty there somewhere on the other side. And I took the clever question on architecture and beat someone like Lord Snowden.
Right.
After that, he was so nice to me.
Really?
I think he just actually thought I was Cleo.
Oh, really? How funny.
Well, that is often the case, isn't it, with things, you know.
Well, and also he was very, very clever in reading his diaries. He wrongly looked down on the carry-ons, didn't he?
Well, you know, I think it does happen with actors, not me, but it does. You know, if once they've got in their head they're going to be a great actor and they have this potential, and then there are sort of actors who think, this awful thing to say, this sort of shaft of light from God coming down, I am an actor, and this, I therefore am special and I have great talent. Well, actually, no, darling, you know, acting is such a silly profession. I mean, look at his slapping makeup on and funny costumes and pretending to be somebody else. No, I don't think it's a shaft of light from God. I think it's just a happy knack of doing something because you literally couldn't do anything else.
And also, do you think it's a thing you can either can do, or you say it's a knack you can do or you can't do? So.
I think it's a happy knack. I think one is, I think what's a coward's one, isn't it? Talent to amuse, yes. I mean, you're a little show off somewhere with an inferiority complex, and you have to keep getting out to prove you're still there. Something that
you're very hard on yourself. But Richard,
no, I do think there is.
Richard Burton said much the same thing. He thought, despite his brilliance, it was silly and unmanly dressing up in.
I mean, sometimes you do think. Now, a couple of weeks ago, I found myself on a small suitcase about that size with an engine in it, whizzing around in circles at Paddington Station. And I thought, Amanda, what are you doing at your age? And you thought, well, in this day and age now, with all the reality thing, you're asked to do the most peculiar things. And you think, no, it is the same silly profession that I started off in.
Right,
this
right.
is exactly the same. It's just as stupid. But if you can get on a small suitcase and whiz around, then, you know, you're still in business, really.
I do think, actually, that very admirable attitude, that has kept your feet on the ground, because I've got a theory, people after 10 years of being very famous, a lot of them go completely crazy, grand. It strikes me it's the first time I've met you, but you're not like that. But some of them do. But maybe that's a shaft of light thing.
I've always thought of that.
Yeah.
When I've occasionally heard an interview and I thought, oh, no, darling, we're not special. I promise you we're not special. Doctors, nurses, all sorts of things are very special. No, actors aren't special. They're a happy band of idiots. And in the old days, they used to cut your ears off or something if they caught you. So, no, don't get carried away.
I think Kenneth Williams, he had been in St. Joan, hadn't he, in the late 50s. I think he wanted to be
a
serious actor.
But then I did hear from someone, they were telling me, somebody who played with him when he eventually went into the West End in another play. And when it wasn't going well, he would break out of character and go into his Kenneth character on stage, to the horror of the cast. So he couldn't, you know, he couldn't hold that other person down. I mean, if you listen to the radio things that he did with Tony Hancock, I mean, they were wonderful.
Oh, yes, and Just a Minute. No, he's fantastic.
And Just a Minute. Yeah. I mean, he's Just a Minute. But he didn't appreciate, maybe he secretly appreciated what he did, because I think he quite liked being famous. But he did want to be taken seriously.
And did you all get along together and hang out in the evening when you were filming?
Oh, no, not then. Because then there was a, I think there was a bigger problem getting home for a start, and also the, it's early calls and everything. I was working in the West End, and in cabby, I think I was just dashing home in order to turn around to get up to come out again. So I didn't do it. Did it a bit on other films with people like James Robertson Justice.
Oh, yes. Was he good news?
Oh, sublime news.
Really?
Yes.
I'd like his character again or not?
Yes, amazingly so, yes.
But the grumpiness was a sort of act at the same time?
Oh, yes. He was utterly charming. Yeah, lovely man. I loved him anyway. I mean, but I think that we all looked up to our sort of stars then, and you went, oh, gosh, I'm working Dennis Price. Oh, my goodness, I'm doing... You know, you did. You got quite carried away. I think the kids probably still do a bit.
Oh, it's only makes sense, doesn't it? Actually, in the case of Carry On Cleo, is it right you were using the sets that were going to be used by Richard Burton and Edward Taylor? So it was actually very, very high production values.
Oh, enormously high production. In fact, that is why it looks so good. And the other thing was, I was complete twit because I had things like shoes, sandals, headdresses with Elizabeth Taylor written in. Now, I mean, I had been known to take the odd thing in the past from a dressing room. I didn't have the wit to take. I mean, eBay, it would have been big news.
God, yes, yeah.
And
yeah,
I promise I won't fake one now and send one in.
But your dress that you had a fitting for, that wasn't hers because she was slightly larger lady.
I mean, there again, you see, my having thought about Elizabeth Taylor and her sticky out bits, I mean, I certainly felt inferior right from the start, you see, that was it.
Well, you're much more beautiful than
she was.
Why
have they got me? Because, I mean, it was my own fault because as a child I used to think, what would you like to look like as a film star? And I used to think, I think I'd like to look like Sabu. The elephant boy. I thought, you do. this is your own fault for having weird thoughts.
But so it was. So everything was very well laid out on set. That was all just there, ready to go for the.
They had one set, and you were filming. And I don't know whether they still do it anywhere else, but they didn't do it at that time. While you were filming that scene, they would light with understandings, everything else. The other set, it would all be being lit on the other set.
Right.
And then, so as soon as you finish, boom, if you were in that scene, you were straight on.
Right. And in fact, if they fit the production right, there's a famous scene where you'll be bathing in ass's milk. Presumably they had to have the bath already set to go. Perhaps
that was Oh, the bath was there all the time. And yes, they nearly killed me in that. They left the heating on by mistake. And they had one more shot to go. And they went, will you do it? And they said the standing won't go in, it's too hot. Idiot went, oh yes, I'll do it, yeah. I went in, so as it passed my heart, I went, nearly passed out.
What, the boiling hot?
Yeah, well, it was too hot, that amount of water over your ticker.
Right.
I did the same thing, offering to do the stunt from the stunt girl, and she didn't turn out rolling out under the carpet.
Oh, the famous scene, fantastic.
Yes, and I went rolling out on the carpet. She's not here. We waited and waited, and I went, oh, come on, I can do it. For goodness sake, you know, dancer, just roll me out under the thing. She just arrived at the 11th hour, and I thought, well, I can't do her out of a day's work. They rolled her out of the carpet. The whole of the trestle table crashed down on her, knocked her teeth out, did her jaw, and I thought, keep your mouth shut, Amanda. Don't offer to do stunt work when you're in a West End production in a film.
Bloody hell.
I'd been out in both. Yeah.
But that shot survived, did it? I mean, the earlier bit of the shot still pretty.
That's her being hit by the table.
And it was in water, it wasn't in milk that you were lying in.
Well, they asked me, is that ass's milk? And I went, oh no, idiot. It was a form of milk. They put something in it. Probably not like dried eggs. You're too young to remember dried eggs, darling. But I think it's probably powdered milk in there.
Right.
It went a bit sort of whiffy occasionally, but no, and it was very pleasant. I mean, I used to stay in there and come out sort of wrinkled from it because I was in there for so long.
How funny. And what did you? What was the reputation of the Carry-Ons like then? Because it strikes me they've gone in and out of fashion. I grew up in them as a child in the 70s and 80s, thought they were fantastic. Some people are very rude about them. What was the reputation then?
The reputation of the Carry-Ons when I did them it was actually, you just didn't admit to doing one. You went, you know, what are you doing? Oh, no, no, carry on. You didn't say, I'm doing a carry on. You didn't. My agent at the time went, well, you can do it, but I really don't want you. Well, no, they didn't initially because they didn't know what they were going to be. So Cabby, it was just another of those little films they were doing. So that's fine. But when I did Cleo, that was still okay. It was they didn't have a reputation. It was just another little film right. They were doing. There wasn't one. But then when I was asked to do the rest of them from there, I was offered, like, after Cleo, to do them all. My agent said, you're not doing that. You're going to Bristol or Vic. And I went, oh, all right. You don't want that sort of reputation. You want, you know, a proper theatre. You were going to Bristol.
Do you think that was right of her? Him, sorry.
Sorry, it's a matter of darling. You don't want to misgender by mistake in this age, too. He was right in some aspects, because I did an awful lot of theatre work. I mean, I was there forever. He was right in some ways, but not in others. You had no idea what the carry-ons were going to become. If I am a gambling lady, I do back horses and things. If I had had a bet then on the carry-ons being thought of as they are today, and Barbara Windsor being a dame, I could have had any price I wanted, I promise you. No way. They were looked down on. Yeah.
But did very well commercially, didn't they? Particularly Cleo.
Yeah. Yes, they always had that following. I don't know what the equivalent would be on television now. I suppose people saying, oh, do you watch Love Island or something?
Right.
You'd say something of that sort of analogy was that, oh, it's a bit, you know, only common people watch those sort of shows. You know, anybody with any intellect is not going to watch that. They definitely won't watch Jeremy Kyle, or they won't see how popular something is or try it out.
Well, people do look down on success, don't they, which is its own reward, isn't
yeah.
it? But when you got the script, because I think it's very well written, particularly Carry On Cleo. I mean, infamy is an incredibly brilliant line, for example.
Oh, it is. I mean, I was doing a show and two boys, very young comics, were in it, and it was that show What I Wrote, the Morecambe and Wise.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
And they wanted a line to do with me. And I went, just say infamy, the organ. And he went, why? And I went, just don't worry about it. Just say it. I won't get a laugh on that. I said, just say the line. I promise you. And we were going on. I said, just say it. And he went, and he said it. He brought the house down. And he came off and said, why? And I went, it's all right, darling. I'll educate you later. It's quite famous. It is.
Doesn't seem too bright, this one, whoever he was. Yeah, yeah.
No, well, you do get that from some of the youngsters haven't followed up the great things, have they, darling? Really. Ooh.
But when you got that script and when you were acting it, did you feel it was well put together? It was very easy.
I think I was too young to do that. I think what I was doing is what I was doing prior to that when I was in review. I read my bits. You know, we do have a tendency. I don't now do that. I read the bits that I was in and thought, oh, that's quite funny.
Well, it's only logical, isn't it? You do that. Yeah.
He is. Well, yes, of course. He is a mute and he cannot speak either. That always made me.
I'll take it. Yep.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. That's quite funny. This was a sausage, I think his name was. I can't remember that. There were quite a few funny lines actually in it, but it was well written and it had a good little plot, two little plots doing the same thing, and it worked.
And it's very, I think, it's very funny and ironic its approach to history. Whoever
yes.
wrote it realises
oh, yes.
he must have known a lot of history
yes.
to play around with.
Yes,
it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes, somebody said the other day to their son or daughter who was doing it, he said, oh, Carry On Cleo must watch that. I said, why? He said, because we're studying Roman history. I said, well, good luck. But,
well, it's got a lot more than a lot of books written
well, yeah.
by people I can't
yeah,
mention.
Yeah.
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 And was it for you, was it your big break, or do you look upon, do take it?
Sorry, everybody, it's... I'm so sorry.
Not at all, no.
I thought it was switched. I took my dog out this morning. I had to thank them.
No problem at all.
Sorry.
Just check that's running, yeah. So, would you say it was your big break, or was there something else you look upon as...
At the time, no, it wasn't. because I just started on a sort of theatre, first, my first sort of big West End part, which was any Wednesday after I'd done She Loves Me, which was a big, quite a coup to get. That. There were 13 American producers, and it had won the awards in America and everything. So no, but subsequently, I mean, I think the English public are very kind, and once you've become part of them, they don't usually desert you.
Right, and you still get people in the street?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't know how they recognise me now, but they do. And the other thing I could never understand is people said sort of rather nudge, nudge, wink, wink to me, saying, as a teenager, you changed my life. And I'm going, sorry, did I have no idea what I did? Yeah, I haven't the slightest idea. And they kept saying that I was sort of sex object. It was the last thing on my mind. All I was thinking was trying to be mildly amusing and accepted by the rest of the cast. The fact that some people actually sort of thought that in any way that I was sexy or attractive, I would, honest to God, never entered my mind.
Even though you must have known you were being cast as the bombshell.
I know, but it didn't filter through, darling. Yeah. I mean, I
suppose... No, it's a modest, natural modesty.
I've been like
that
all my life.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry.
No, don't worry.
I'm sorry about that, folks. I'm sorry. I just switch it off. I've got somebody who's in hospital who I've got to pick up when I leave. That's why I didn't switch off, and I've now switched off, so it would. Sorry.
That couldn't matter less, though. Now you look back at it and you must go,
oh,
Christ.
I look back now and I think, my God, that was a lucky break. Because, you know, if you're lucky enough to have done, I mean, some people have great careers. Other people are sort of kind of lucky. Because any good work I ever did, I don't think anybody ever saw, because it was always on stage or to the West End or somewhere. But if you'd been lucky enough to be in the Carry Ons, and then you've been lucky enough to be in Coronation Street, and you've been lucky enough to be in a couple of other series of sort. In a way, you sort of poddle through with people, and it's a great privilege, actually. You know that you do feel that you've got a lot of friends out there. You haven't actually done it. It's the public; they are so nice.
Talking of Coronation Street, that is incredibly hard work, isn't it? Was it exhausting?
Well, I think really the main reason that soaps are so tiring, and I mean, come on, we're not working down a mine, but you are mentally, because I always say to taxi drivers, you know, how would you like to do the knowledge every night? In fact, it wasn't the ordinary filming, which is pretty bad, because you get up in the dark and go to bed in the dark, and there weren't any windows in our place, so you didn't know what the seasons were, really. But the thing was coming home, and then if you were in a storyline, you had this terrible thing of filleting your scripts, as we called it, because you have to find, it's not given to you, you have to go through all these episodes, find it, making sure you've got all the numbers of your scenes. I mean, if you're in a big storyline, it takes you longer to fill it, the bloody thing, than it does to actually learn it. You're going, oh my God, and then you would be sitting there with your head going, nod, oops. And Sue Nichols and I used to ring each other at night occasionally and we'd go, sorry, can you ring me back? I've only got another 7 pages to... Yeah, all right, I'll ring back. So you were always... And when I see them now looking so utterly relaxed and knowing that actually you're not, because you grab the person you're working with and say the lines. And because when you go in, the set's being hammered, the thing's being done, you've only got about 15 minutes a scene. So I think it's developed a whole era of actors that do not have temperaments, because in the old days when I started, there were an awful lot of people around throwing temperaments, hurling scripts across the room, behaving as divas. You can't do that, darling, because you wouldn't be able to learn your part if you did that yourself. So I think it's erased
How fascinating. Because I wrongly thought people's egos are getting bigger and bigger.
No, because you're on the line every day. You've got to produce it every day. You can't go, well, we're filming this film for 6 months, and, you know, if I'm not on the set tomorrow, or if you're on stage, you know, well, this is going to run for another 2 years. No, because you are down to, on that day, you do what you're doing, and you have to keep up. You can't be, you know, it's like a little going up an escalator. You know, if you get off it, you think, oh Christ, how am I going to get back on it? So people that drop out of soaps, I think, have to take a big deep breath to go back in, because everything is going like that. I mean, I don't think you have much of a life, to be honest. You go, that's why I thought, oh, I think I've got other things in my head to do. Amazing, it's an amazing, because you have this family around you. You are a family. And I think I heard somebody else say it the other day, I'm not even sure if it wasn't Jim Whitfield, that we in the theatre always look to be lovies and darlings, and always it wonderful, and you see people with things and everybody's greeting everybody. The reason is that most of the time we do make very close friends when you're working, because it's like being in the war, really. It's a mixture of fear and elation, like, oh, I've done it, oh, I didn't die of fright, oh, I've managed to get through it, we got through together, like scoring a goal. And then you're stripped apart.
And you're spending, what, 10 hours a day with each other?
More than you do with your relationships. Yep. And then you're ripped apart. And the odds of working with that person again are... And also, you don't see them because, you know, I always think with friendships, logistics are everything. And I think it also happens to old people, because logistically you get separated. And, you know, in the theatre, when you see people again, they are almost like family when you see them again. But the thing of having them in a little clump around you, so you're all there as a unit. And we actually all enjoy our charity shows. What am I talking about? So I cut that out. I love doing the trip to India.
Oh, yes.
Well, I didn't like India, but I loved us being together like some terrible boarding school.
Because you already liked them? You already knew your fellow...
I only knew Lionel.
Right.
Who is even older than me.
Yes. What's Lionel like?
Oh, just the same as he always... I went to his 90th birthday last week.
Amazing. How was that?
It was lovely. It was very, very nice.
Where was that held?
It is at his home.
All right.
So he had all his family there. And I think I was the oldest from the past year. I was one of his first dancers. So that was lovely. But then doing Big Brother.
Right.
I mean... I, of all people, make friends with Anne Widdecombe. We could not be politically and everything else more opposed. But actually living with somebody, the different aspects of making friends.
And you got on with her, did you?
Oh, me, yes.
Quite flinty, isn't she? Or not really in the
first? Yes, I used to use her every night. I said to her one night, I have to say this to Anne, we are in the Big Brother house and they are still filming us. We were sitting in our dormitories in beds. And I said, we have just been discussing the Jacobite Rebellion for the last 20 minutes. And frankly, the viewing figures are falling.
Fantastic.
And then we went through the Reformation of the churches thing and everything and something else. And I said, we can't keep doing this. If you start talking about the repeal of the Corn Laws, I'm going now.
Oh, but we did. Much more interesting than everyone having sex with each other.
The point was, it's not why you're going to the Big Brother house from their point of view. Anne Widdecombe and Amanda Barry are discussing the Jacobite Rebellion.
I'd pay to see it. We were talking about June Whitfield, who I met at an Audi of the Year lunch. Absolutely wonderful woman, an incredible pro, is that right?
Oh!
Yeah.
Right, I think I first worked with June in Seven Faces of Jim, was it Seven or Six Faces of Jim, with Jimmy Edwards. And that's in the 50s.
Yeah.
That was the first time I actually worked with her. And from right the way through. And I have to say, anybody who could work with all the comics, and one shouldn't speak ill of the dead, but she worked with some pretty tricky people over the years that a lot of people had terrible trouble with. And she didn't, because June had this wonderful, calm, professional, and wildly talented. I heard on something the other day, they played her singing something from Love from Judy. And she had this wonderful singing voice, well as everything else. And a beautiful skin, incredible eyes. June Whitfield's eyes were something to behold.
There's a very good story when she sadly died about her working with Tony Hancock before a scene and him saying, "What's it all about? I'm going through an existentialist crisis." She said, "Well, you're going to have to put that to one side. We're about to go on set in 5 seconds, darling."
That's it, darling. You can't do that now, darling. You have to have a breakdown in a minute. I'll have it with you. I'll have a very, very nervous breakdown with you, darling, in a minute, if you just get through this.
Yeah.
I've actually sat with somebody in Coronation Street who did die shortly afterwards, and I was sitting there. We were about to go, and she said, "Oh, Mandeloff, I think I'm going." And I said, "Where?" And she said, no, I'm going with your man." I went, "What do you mean, going?" She said, I think I'm going." I said, "Do you want me to get the nurse?" "No, if you just hold my hand, I'll be very happy if I go with you." And I went, "You can't go now. If you die there outside the cafe, every scene I do, I'll be seeing you dead in a chair. Pull yourself together." And 2 minutes later, they called us and we did the scene. And I said, but she did die.
Really?
I loved her to bits. Phyllis. Yes, I loved her to pieces, yeah.
And Amanda, what are you up to at the moment? What are you working on?
I'm about, I think, to do another of these strange reality shows where one can be asked to do almost anything and they don't tell you in advance, dear. So I think I'm doing one. I think it starts next week.
You can't say what it is. Is it?
I don't know what the name of the thing is.
Oh, right.
No, I mean, you never do.
Right.
I've got two to come out. One is to do with grumpy old bad-tempered, which I am not, obviously.
Really not.
Old-age pensioners. But that one to come out, and another one to come out. I did a Harry Hill. So they're all sitting there somewhere. But that is my next thing. And when that's done, and I don't, they sort of come randomly in. I can't actually say it here yet, of course. I was approached for the Edinburgh Festival. I said, "Oh, I don't think they'd want me at the Edinburgh Festival, darling." I can't think of anything that would interest them at all, except things you couldn't talk about.
And are they enjoyable to do those reality shows, or is it like acting for a very, very, very long time?
They're weird, because I have to say my joy was working, who is now a friend, with Henry Blofeld.
Henry, great man, yeah.
And we have become very good friends. And I see him on a regular basis and have the longest text messages. And I love it when he leaves a phone message, because it really is like tuning in to a test match, really.
A colleague in the office was amazed when he got a call from Henry Blofeld.
God, the first time I heard it, I went, listen to him. He's on my phone. And we did one of these things together, and that was the joy of doing it, that we absolutely bonded doing it and became outrageous and behaved like children. And everybody was trying to find something the two of us could do. As yet, nobody has said, what a good idea. And we keep saying, anybody done? I mean, we wouldn't have thought that we would have been a good pair, but we were. We were very good together. So sometimes you find somebody you can bounce off, and other times you go, oh dear, now I'm looking rather stupid and trying to do it.
It must be strange, because neither, it isn't real life, is it?
Oh,
but
no.
Nor is it, obviously, no. Like acting in a play
no,
or a film.
And I think if you could, if you did have the ability to really just be yourself doing it with things, then I think they're quite interesting, some of those shows. I mean, the Celebrity Big Brother, as an idea, it's a brilliant idea. I mean, what then happened with everybody crawling in out of bed is not a good idea, but it is a good idea, but not understand. But the actual idea of taking everything off you and leaving you in that situation and you not having your own thoughts, your own, you're not used to that.
Yeah.
And you go, you don't know what time it is, and you don't know what time they're going to let you go to sleep, you don't know what time you're waking up with. I think Rachel Johnson and I found it easier than some. At the beginning, because we'd been to boarding schools.
Yes. Did you get on with Rachel?
Yes.
Yeah, no, she
was in my next bed.
Oh, yes. Now, she, like you, probably, she's very tough. You just get on with it, don't you?
Rachel was getting on with it fine. I never knew where she was. Well, you never know why people vote you out. I was so impressed with Rachel standing on her hands.
Oh, she's just written an article about how wonderful, about working on her bum. She's very, very fit.
Oh, I know she is.
Yeah.
And then I met Daddy recently, and I'm rather bonded with Daddy.
He also is a force of nature, isn't
he? Just met Daddy, and I said, because we missed each other on one of these reality shows.
Amazed we haven't crossed yet.
And I thought, oh my goodness, the people that you meet on the reality shows, you go, well, I never thought I'd be working with you. I mean, you know, I'm Whittaker was a surprise, but you go, I love it, from that point of view.
Anyway, it's a good place to stop. I'm so grateful to Amanda Barry for accepting the Oldie of the Year award and for appearing on the March issue of the Oldie podcast. Thanks so much, Amanda.
Thank you, darling, for listening to rubbish.